Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopijana Vallabha Giribhadrahari Gopijana Vallabha Giribhadrahari Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Banachari Yamuna Tira Banachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari Paravita Kacharya, Stotitis at the Sri Srimad's Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON BBD Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Jai Om Vishnu Pada, Paramahansa Paravita Kacharya, Stotitis at the Sri Srimad's Divine Grace, ISKCON BBD Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Anantakoti Vaishnavinda Ki Jai, Prince Kaho, Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Paguna Chananda, Shri Advaita Gadar, Shri Vasudhi, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Kijai, Shri Shri Radha Krishna, Go Gopinath, Shyamakunda Radha Kunda, Giddigabadan Kijai, Vrindavan Dham Kijai, Navadip Mayapur Dham Kijai, Ganga Jamunamaya Kijai, Tulasi Devi Maharani Kijai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Kijai, Harinam Sankirtan Kijai, Brihat Madanga Kijai, All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Garanga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 13, and we'll chant text 6 together, and then I'll go on from there because it doesn't have a purport, but we could chant 6 together. Maitreya Uvacha. Yada swabharyaya sardham. Yada swabharyaya sardham. Jata swayambhuvo manu. Jata swayambhuvo manu. Pranjali pranatas chedam. Pranjali pranatas chedam. Veda garbam abhasata. Veda garbam abhasata. Maitreya Uvacha. Yadasva bharyaya sardam. Jatasvayambhuvo manu. Pranjali pranatas chedam. Veda garbam. Vaishnavis. Maitreya Uvacha. Maitreya said, Yada, when, Swabharyaya, along with his wife, Sardam, accompanied by, Jataha, appeared, Swayambhuva, Swayambhuva Manu, Manu, the father of mankind, Pranjali, with folded hands, Pranata, in obeisances, Ja, also, Idam, this, Vedagarbham, unto the reservoir of Vedic wisdom, Abhasata, addressed. Translation, and no purport, translation by Srila Prabhupada, the sage Maitreya said to Vidura, after his appearance, Manu, the father of mankind, along with his wife, thus addressed the reservoir of Vedic wisdom, Brahma, with obeisances and folded hands. Text 7, I'll just chant this on my own. Tvam eka sarvabhutanam janmakrid vritita pita tatapina prajanam te sushusha kenava bhavet. Translation. This is Manu speaking now. You are the father of all living entities and the source of their subsistence because they are all born of you. Please order us how we may be able to render service unto you. Srila Prabhupada's purport. A son's duty is not only to make the father the source of supply for all his needs, but also, when he is grown up, to render service unto him. That is the law of creation, beginning from the time of Brahma. A father's duty is to bring up the son until he is grown, and when the son is grown up, it is his duty to render service unto the father. I'm going to do text 8 and 9 as well. Tad vidhi vidhihi namastubhyam karmas vidyatma saktishu yat kritveha yaso vishvag amutra cha bhaved gati. Translation. O worshipful one, please give us your direction for the execution of duty within our working capacity so that we can follow it for fame in this life and progress in the next. Purport. Brahma is the direct recipient of Vedic knowledge from the personality of Godhead, and anyone discharging his entrusted duties in the disciplic succession from Brahma is sure to gain fame in this life and salvation in the next. The disciplic succession from Brahma is called the Brahma Sampradaya, and it descends as follows. Brahma, Narada, Vyas, Madhvamuni, in parentheses, Purna Pragya, Padmanabha, Nrihari, Madhava, Asobhya, got it, third time, okay. Jayatirtha, Gyanasindhu, Dayanidhi, Vijanidhi, Rajendra, Jaidharma, Pudushottam, Brahmanyatirtha, Vyasatirtha, Lakshmipati, Madhavendrapuri, Ishvarapuri, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Swarup Damodar, and Sri Rupa Goswami and others, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Krishna Das Goswami, Narottam Das Thakur, Vishwanath Chakravarti, Jagannath Das Babaji, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Gaurakishore Das Babaji, Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. This line of disciplic succession from Brahma is spiritual, whereas the genealogical succession from Manu is material. But both are on the progressive march towards the same goal of Krishna consciousness. Now, text 9. Brahma vacha pritastubhyam aham tata swasti stadvam shitishvara yan nirvya likena rida sadi met yatmanar pitam. Translation. Lord Brahma said, "My dear son, O Lord of the world, I am very pleased with you, and I desire all blessings for both you and your wife. You have without reservation surrendered yourself unto me with your heart for my instructions." Purport. The relationship between the father and the son is always sublime. The father is naturally disposed with goodwill towards the son, and he is always ready to help the son in his progress in life. But in spite of the father's goodwill, the son is sometimes misguided because of his misuse of personal independence. Every living entity, however small or big he may be, has the choice of independence. If the son is unreservedly willing to be guided by the father is 10 times more eager to instruct and guide him by all means. The father and son relationship, as exhibited here in the dealings of Brahma and Manu, is excellent. Both the father and the son are well qualified, and their example should be followed by all humankind. Manu, the son, unreservedly asked the father, Brahma, to instruct him, and the father, who was full of Vedic wisdom, was very glad to instruct. The example of the father of mankind may be rigidly followed by mankind, and that will advance the cause of the relationship of fathers and sons. Chakshurin Loitamena Tasma Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakaramayam Dadati Swaparantikam. So here Prabhupada refers in his purport, the first one that I read, something he refers to something called the law of creation. And this one, I'm sure there's more than one law of creation, but the one he's referring to here is the idea that a parent's duty is to bring up the son. You see, the father's duty is to bring up the son until he is grown. That's one part of it. And when the son is grown up, it is his duty to render service unto the father. So that's a law of creation. That's how it's supposed to work. And so there's responsibility there, you know. And in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a very famous verse. I believe it's Lord Rishabhdev who's speaking. He says, Gurur nasasyat, swajano nasasyat, pita nasasyaj, janani nasasyat, daivam natasyan, napatis chasasyan, namochayadya samupecha mrityum. One who cannot deliver his dependence from the path of repeated birth and death should never become a spiritual master, a father, a husband, a mother, or a worshipable demigod. So it's not a cheap thing. You know, this is this is the law of creation, and it has to be entered into with great, not caution, but, you know, with a sense of responsibility. You know, the father should be thinking, I shouldn't become a father unless I'm prepared to really do what's required to help this, my offspring, become delivered from the cycle of birth and death. Right? And that same attitude, now, you know, we're going to expand upon this idea here. It's not true only for the relationship between the father and the son. It's true for the relationship between any kind of a leader. If you're going to take responsibility for somebody, then you have to be thinking in terms of, okay, I got to help this person make progress in spiritual life. I got to help this person get free from the cycle of birth and death. Otherwise, you shouldn't really enter into that relationship. It's a big responsibility. And so that's the responsibility on that side. And then from the other side, the responsibility who of someone who is a dependent, you know, somebody who does take shelter and is being kind of maintained by somebody, instructed by somebody, their responsibility is to serve that person. And Prabhupada actually mentions in the next purport, he uses the phrase, he says, if the son is unreservedly willing to be guided by the father is 10 times more eager to instruct and guide him by all means. So that's kind of like the secret of success in spiritual life. It's talking about the father and son relationship here, but just in general, like in the relationship between the spiritual master and the disciple, if the disciple is unreservedly willing to be guided by the spiritual master, then the spiritual master is 10 times more eager to instruct and guide him by all means. So that's a really important point there. And of course, Manu is, exemplifying this here. He's unreservedly willing to accept, you know, whatever instruction Lord Brahma sends his way. And Lord Brahma is very pleased with that. And he mentions here, in the translation, he says, I desire all blessings for both you and your wife. See, that's the way to get the blessings. You know, if you're unreservedly willing to serve the spiritual master, assuming you have a bona fide spiritual master, then the spiritual master will desire all blessings for you and your wife, if you have married as well. But he'll desire all blessings for you. And there's examples for this. Some off the top of my head, some examples I thought of was Ishvara Puri. Ishvara Puri received the blessings of Madhavendra Puri because he was unreservedly willing to serve him, to the extent where he, when Madhavendra Puri, right at the end of his life, was what's the word? Not incontinent. Is that correct? Sorry.
Incapacitated.
Thank you. That's a better word. He was incapacitated, and Ishvara Puri had to help him with his personal things. You know, he had to help him kind of take care of his body, and so that was, you know, very surrendered service. And Madhavendra Puri appreciated that. He got the blessings. And one of those blessings was he became the spiritual master of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Chaitanya. So that was a blessing of his guru, Madhavendra Puri. Another example of that is of this idea of being unreservedly willing to serve the spiritual master. Well, Krishna and Sudama Brahman, they were unreservedly willing to serve Sandipani Muni. And they went out to collect, you know, wood, and they got caught in that storm and everything. And anyway, they got a blessing as well. Krishna got a blessing from his spiritual master because he manifested or exhibited that unreservedly willing service attitude. That's surrender, by the way. You know, there's no difference between being unreservedly willing, and that is, in so many other words, that's surrendering. Lord Ramachandra, when he got the instruction from his father, Maharaj Dasarath, you know, you have to go. You have to, you know, this is what happened, and you have to go out and go into exile for 14 years, was it, or 13? 13? 14.
14 years.
So he did it. You know, he didn't, no argument. He just accepted that, unreservedly willing to serve the, you know, follow the instruction of his spiritual master. He got blessings. And, of course, Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada is a great example of that. Unreservedly willing. You could almost say Prabhupada is unreservedly willing personified. He was unreservedly willing to execute the instruction of his spiritual master. And as a result, he became empowered. He got blessings like any. That's how this Krishna conscious movement, exists, became successful. Prabhupada, because he was unreservedly willing to serve his spiritual master, and he proved it, he demonstrated it, then he just got empowered by Bhaktisiddhanta and by the whole disciplic succession, and that's why this movement became successful. And Prabhupada saw it like that, and he made statements, you know, to that effect. So that's a very, you know, important point. And it's true on an individual level and collective level. Prabhupada says here, and I'll explain what I mean by that, in the last sentence of the last purport I read, Prabhupada says, the example of the father of mankind may be rigidly followed by mankind, and that will advance the cause of the relationship of fathers and sons. So, in other words, it's It's a principle. You see, it's a principle. And if anybody who is unreservedly willing to surrender, you know, they benefit. But it benefits the whole, like say you're in an organization. It benefits the whole organization. Like let's use our Krishna consciousness movement as an example. So if devotees are unreservedly willing to surrender to the higher authorities, assuming that the higher authorities are qualified, then things happen. You know, things progress nicely. And Prabhupada sort of really acknowledged this point in one of the final, very important instruction he gave, one of the final and very important instructions he gave. He said, "Your love for me will be shown by how much you cooperate with each other to keep this institution together after I'm gone." So to do that, to cooperate, sometimes that involves one aspect of cooperating is because we have a hierarchy, you know, we're not on an equal level. You know, there's like devotees in the temple, there's your department heads, there's the temple president, there's the GBC, there's sannyasis, there's gurus like that. So, you know, part of being cooperating is at some point being unreservedly willing, you know, to surrender like that. And so if that's there, things can go on and progress is made. You know, that's how, I mean, if the people who are in charge have to, you know, feel like they got to twist people's arms, it doesn't work. There's no taste in that, you know. They lose enthusiasm to do that service, and also if the people who are in the position who are supposed to be unreservedly willing to surrender aren't, then you know, that doesn't work either. That won't help them, and it won't help anybody else. So, well, I can't think. I can't remember the point I was going to make, but I'll make another point. Now I remember the point. Thank you, Krishna. Matux materi gyanam apomanaja. Krishna says, "I am the knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness." Okay. So somebody might say, "Well, you know, this is like a big thing. You know, you're asking, or it's being asked to be unreservedly, you know, surrendered like that, unreservedly willing." Like, for instance, like take ISKCON, you know, Prabhupada appointed 11 gurus. Theoretically, that's what we're, you know, led to believe. And, you know, of the 11, I think there's just one or two that are still around in completely 100% squeaky clean good standing. So that's, you know, somebody might say, well, I mean, you know, What if I unreservedly surrender to somebody and they're not really qualified to? That is a problem. That is a problem. You know. So that, as I said, started off by saying there's that verse that, you know, you have to be very serious that being in any position of leadership in the society, you have to be really serious about it because, you know, it's a big responsibility. As it says
in the verse,
one who cannot deliver the dependence from the path of repeated birth and death should never become a spiritual master, a this or that or the other thing. You know, you can fill in the blanks. You got to take it seriously. You have to be in that consciousness of, you know, cultivating at least, you know, striving for being qualified to deliver dependence from the path of repeated birth and death if you want to be in a position of leadership within ISKCON. That's important. And also, another important point, there's another verse that kind of relates to this, that in this verse appears in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and it talks about, you know, the other end, that the people who are receiving leadership, they have to feel indebted. They should feel indebted. You know, it's not like it's a freebie. We're receiving shelter. We're on so many different levels. We are receiving shelter. I mean, even on the basic material levels, you come to the Krishna conscious movement, you're receiving shelter, and that you're being given a place to stay. You know, with light, heat, toilet, shower, prasadam, you know, place to come and worship, company, you know, association. I mean, and what to speak of spiritual instruction, engagement. You know, we're receiving so much. So therefore, you know, people who are being led, so to speak, they should feel indebted. They should feel like gratitude, and they should be wanting to reciprocate. And there's a verse that kind of makes that point. It's, as I said, it's from the 11th canto, 5th chapter. It goes, Devarshi bhutapta nirnam pitvirinam nikinkuro nayam rini charajan sarvatma yasadanam saranyam gato mukundam paririthya kartum. Translation is, O king, one who has given up all material duties and has taken full shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, who offers shelter to all, is not indebted to the demigods, great sages, ordinary living beings, relatives, friends, mankind, or even one's forefathers who have passed away. Since all such classes of living entities are parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, one who has surrendered to the Lord's service has no need to serve such persons. So the point is, the reason I'm reading this one is because it's indicating that you do have a debt. And it's like, if you're not completely surrendered to the lotus feet of Mukunda, then you're indebted to demigods, great sages, ordinary living beings, relatives. So the point is, it's a life. Human life is a life of responsibility. You see, of course, you know, we want to try to be fully surrendered to the lotus feet of Mukunda like that. But the idea is that we should feel like we have obligation. You know, if you're receiving benefits, benefits from somebody, you know, from some organization or some individual like that, you should feel like, well, now what's my obligation to that person? And there is one. And that's the point that this verse is making, that obligation is there. You know, if you're not completely obligated to, you know, to the Supreme Lord, then you're obligated to all these other personalities, you know, that you're receiving all these benefits from. So that should be there. So on this point then about, because, you know, we want to be, and we understand, in theory, we all accept this idea that we should be unreservedly willing, you know, to serve. But then the question arises, well, but is it practical? Because, you know, we've seen in the history of ISKCON, there's been so many mishaps, you know, examples of people who were being unreservedly surrendered to, and it didn't work out. You know, they were disappointing result. So you have to be really careful. I guess you just have to really, it's a big, big decision. It's a big step. And it's something that has to be really considered very carefully. But I think that, you know, what's the word? I was looking for an expression, but it's not just popping to mind. But it's not like if something goes wrong, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's always going to go wrong. Like, I think we saw a very good, at least for me, I saw what I thought was a very good example this past weekend, you know, just before the weekend, of, you know, a person who I felt like, if I was a new devotee and I was, you know, looking for somebody I could unreservedly surrender to, I felt like I saw somebody. You know, Vaisheshika Prabhu was here. He gave this really amazing class, and you know, it's you know, it was. I feel like I know him for years and years and years, as some, you know, Savas Prabhu does, Archie. And you know, it's like there's somebody who I felt like, wow, if I was a new person coming to Krishna consciousness, I could feel like I could unreservedly surrender, you know, to somebody like that. So, and he's just one. I have this thing in what I call the Club 33. Club 33. Prabhupada, you know, we just read these, heard the disciplic succession, and the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada puts numbers, and he was number 32. So number 33 is, you know, the next. So I don't have one person as number 33. That's why I call it Club 33. In my mind, there are like, I have, you know, a certain number of individuals who I consider in that category of the next acharya. You know, it's one thing to be a you know, a sannyasi or a guru, but I mean, to be an acharya, that's like, you know, it's a very exalted position. And but I feel that there are, like, you know, there are people within our movement who are demonstrating that they deserve that sort of being related to in that way. They're showing by their behavior, by the, you know, they're practically demonstrating by their service and by their behavior, by everything, so many different aspects that, yeah, they can be thought of in that light. So, once again, the expression is escaping me, but okay, this, things have gone wrong in the past, but there are present now, I believe, you know, personalities who you can unreservedly, should be unreservedly willing to take shelter of and surrender to, and this whole idea can go on. And as, you know, Prabhupada said, this will do a lot to advance the cause of the relationship, or it will do a lot to advance the cause of the Krishna consciousness movement, if, you know, that type of a relationship exists and, you know, is continued on. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any question for starters? Question?
That responsibility of a father and son, it was vividly described in the Mahabharata, the opposite, when Dhritarashtra and his son Duryodhana did not act properly according to undeservedly surrender, in spite of being preached by Krishna himself, Vyasadeva. So now my question will be, since many of us here didn't come from that background or culture of, what do you say, with families born in this tradition, very culture, and we have fathers, we have, you know, relatives, we interact, and they're not at that level, and we haven't really surrendered, like you say, completely, like the verse that you quote, the Varshi Bhutaptan in Ampitrinam, that, you know, you are not indebted to the demigods, to the sages. What's your advice for those devotees who have connection with fathers and mothers, and there might not necessarily be Krishna conscious then? They're doing service here, but at the same time, they have relatives.
Yeah. If they're not inimical, you can keep the association. You know, if they're not inimical, if they're not against your being a devotee, if they don't try to interfere with your involvement in the Krishna consciousness movement, there's no harm in, you know, keeping some extent of a relationship going. If they're receptive, then cultivate them, and always be respectful, and you know, preach when it's welcome. Don't try to force the philosophy down their throat. You know, that's a big mistake. Just when they want, you know, when you can see that they're interested to hear something, if they ask a question, or you know, you can feel that they're, then okay. Otherwise, just be friendly, be respectful always, be friendly, prasadam, and keep the lines of communication open. And at the same time, you don't have to, like, necessarily get involved in big, elaborate family affairs, like, you know, going back for this holiday, this, they'll understand. They'll understand. You know, I'm sure they'll also be respectful of, you know, what you're trying to do with your life. So just, you know, those would be the guidelines I would suggest. Keep the lines of, if they're not inimical, keep the lines of communication open. Always be respectful, friendly, and ready to explain something if they're interested. Otherwise, prasadam, you know, invite them to come and visit the temple like that. That makes sense? Okay. Question? Okay, questions first and then the comment, yeah?
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for the class. Could you give some, like, anecdotal historical example from ISKCON where, like, full cooperation, full surrender and compliance made some huge benefit for progressing the movement in some sort of way? Just for an example.
Yes, sure. Good answer, huh? Okay. Thank you. Okay. Any other question? Otherwise, we'll take Amala Bhakti Maharaj's comment. Okay. Pass the mic over.
First of all, I want to thank you for this wonderful class. I was relishing and enjoying every moment of it because it's such an important principle, the idea of responsibility. And what does it mean? And how important is it? And why is it important? It's important, first of all, whether you're a temple president or vice president, secretary is irrelevant. The important point is that we're all servants of God, servants of Krishna, and we are trying to give pleasure to Krishna through our service. So you may be a temple president, and you have certain responsibilities to perform, and if you perform the way Krishna would like them performed, then not only is Krishna happy, but because of his happiness, his pleasure, he also makes others enjoy, others cooperate, others have fulfillment and happiness. So what we do not only is important for everyone here, but it's important to give pleasure to the Lord because that's what devotional service is. It's not merely mechanical service or uncaring service or thoughtless service. It's service in which you want to give pleasure. You want the Lord to be pleased. You want him to be satisfied, and being satisfied, he then reciprocates and gives satisfaction not only to that devotee who's doing the service, but to some of the other devotees who are receiving the service. So our responsibility is not only ours, but it extends to everyone who's in the temple. For example, let us just say, I'm just a fairly new person, but I know one principle, and I was told that if you see some trash on the floor, pick it up and put it in the trash can, and don't wait till the person who's supposed to do that does it. You don't have to wait to do something that's useful and which is simple. So one person sees it and says, well, I'll wait till the person who trash. So the place, the Lord is seeing all the trash on the floor when you have the opportunity to pick it up and put it in the trash can. So when we start to think in those terms that I'm this and I'm that, rather than I'm a servant of God, and here's an opportunity for me to serve God and please God, then do it. And if you feel you're above that, then you don't understand the principle of devotional service. Devotional service is that which will please Krishna. On the other hand, we shouldn't go to try to take somebody's service away, which I've had done many times to me, out of respect. Not because they didn't feel I could do the service. They say, I'm a sannyasi, therefore you take it easy, sit down. I said, no, I don't want to sit down. I want to do service. I want to be an example to people so that they who are not on the sannyas platform will follow in the footsteps of what I'm doing. So therefore, what I do has a lot to do with what others will do. Similarly, the temple president, he sets an example. And by seeing his example and utilizing his example, everyone becomes a servant of the Lord with the understanding that we're all participating, we're all contributing to Krishna's pleasure. And if we keep that in mind, then what happens is our service will give us lots of pleasure because Krishna, who's in the heart, will feel that effort that we're making to give him pleasure, and he will reciprocate with the pleasure in our heart, and we will feel bliss, we will feel happiness and satisfaction and fulfillment. Otherwise, if it's just another job to do, that's not devotional service. And I've seen that done with myself in the past, and I see it done even now. No, it's not just another job, like you were mentioning. It's something we have to consider as very important, very valuable, and therefore Because it is. Why is it valuable? Because it's pleasing or serving Krishna with pleasure. And if Krishna is pleased by it, then so many other people are going to be pleased by Krishna's pleasure on all of us.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Grantar Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Who gets the mic?